We've often spoken here on the show about the camps the U.S. government built to detain people of Japanese descent during World War II. About 120,000 people were forced into those camps. It's an ugly history, but there's a piece of it that is not well known, how a Japanese incarceration camp came to be built on Indian land. Naomi Gingold has that story from Arizona.
At the age of 11, Ron Moore moved with his family to Poston, Arizona.
When we moved down here, we moved down into camp, too. We moved into one of the barracks.
One of the barracks at what's known as the Poston internment camp. But the thing is, Ron Moore is not Japanese-American. He's Hopi. And when he moved to Poston, it was 1949.
It's kind of a long, complicated story, but I'll try and get it as brief as I can.
In 1865, the U.S. government established the Colorado River Indian Reservation in Arizona. The population was small, the land mostly desert, and for years, the government wanted to irrigate to make the reservation more self-sufficient. The idea was that the government would then move in more Native Americans. But the irrigation projects didn't succeed. In the 1920s and 30s, there was a tense battle over water rights to the Colorado River, especially between California and Arizona. The reservation received a large water allocation, and the Federal Office of Indian Affairs was worried that they might lose it if they didn't prove that they were using that water.
They're trying to save the water allocation to the tribe.
Ron Moore used to be a planner for the Colorado River Indian tribes.
And the only way that they could see that they would be able to do that would be to create enough irrigated farmlands to justify them keeping their water allocation.
So when the government decided to lock Japanese Americans in prison camps during World War II, the head of Indian Affairs saw an opportunity and offered the reservation as a site.
So he says, okay, I will let the Japanese internment camps come in here, provided you give me X number of dollars for roads, you give me X number of dollars for canal system, you give me X number of dollars to extend the power.
Poston was hot, 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 and it was dusty because it was just a desert.
Ruth Okimoto was 6 years old when she and her family were forced from their home in San Diego and sent to the Poston camp.
There were six of us with a baby that was just a few weeks old when we moved into this 10 by 20 room. I mean, it was just a room. It had nothing in there.
Dust blew in. Barbed wire fences surrounded them. Okimoto's dad, like others, built a garden to grow vegetables.
And he also built a fish pond. I remember thinking, my God, a fish pond. Anyway, I don't know where he got the concrete, but we had go fish in Poston.
That concrete was also being used elsewhere on the reservation to build roads and irrigation canals, with the help of Japanese-American labor. Many of the people detained at Poston had no idea they were on a reservation, but there were some interactions. Years later, Okimoto went back and did research on the camp, and she met a Native American man who told her that he and his friends
would go down to the camps and challenge the Japanese American boys to basketball games.
And there were other interactions.
The story I was told was in the evening time.
David Harper is the historic preservation officer for the Colorado River Indian Tribes. And as we walk around the site of the former camp, he tells me that the Japanese Americans would take the vegetables that they grew.
Mojave people would get rabbit or a deer, and they would trade at the camp gates at night when nobody knew.
In 1945, the Japanese American detainees went home. But the story of the Poston camp doesn't end there. For a brief period, the U.S. government had a, quote, colonization program, where they moved other tribes onto the reservation. Like Ron Moore's family, they were promised land for farming and houses. Houses that were really just former camp barracks. And as the government intended, other buildings at Poston were also turned over to the Native Americans. David Harper, the preservation officer, remembers the gym.
We used to come here and play basketball. They had rafters, like the Boston Garden. So it felt like you were playing basketball in the Boston Garden. And it was creaky and creepy, and it had all the elements of a darn good place to play ball.
A fire later made most of the buildings unusable. But today, there's a new school building on the site of the former prison camp. And around Poston?
Alfalfa fields.
It's lush farmland, thanks to the irrigation system that started to take shape during the war years. Back in 1942, the Colorado River Tribal Council objected to Poston being built on their land. But they had no power to stop it. Before I visited, I'd heard that the council had not wanted another group to face injustice. But Harper says it was more complicated than just that.
The only thing that the tribe agreed to was help build the infrastructure of the shacks that they lived in.
I say a shack, but it was a lot better than what the tribal people were living in. And so the tribe was kind of upset that they would house these people, give X amount of money to house them, and yet we live substandard.
Harper says you have to understand what it was like for the tribes at the end of the Depression, when they had almost nothing. Ruth Okimoto puts it this way. The Poston camp was really an internment camp inside another internment camp. In 1988, the Colorado River Indian tribes gave former Poston prisoners land for a memorial. And today, descendants of both groups are working to preserve the remaining camp buildings.
This is a historical thing that happened on our reservation, and we want to preserve it for our children.
So that they, and really everyone in this country, remembers what happened here. And he says, so nobody repeats anything like it ever again. For The World, Naomi Gingold, Parker, Arizona.